I mean, what an incredible movie. And as I think about, you know, this movie is not just about the Toon Squad versus the Goon Squad, but LeBron James in this particular film, he's actually fighting and playing for so much more. He's playing for his family. And we're looking at, in this film, we see LeBron James who's playing himself. He's King James, right? He's like one of the greatest basketball players of all time. I mean, we look at the records, we look at the championships, we look at the game six blocks and all types of things that have taken place in his career. And we see that we actually get to see him as a father. We get to see him as a dad, right? And we get to see him as a dad, and he has sons and he has a daughter as well. But in this film, it actually focuses on the sons. And what we see in this film, it's really cool. We see him, you know, being LeBron, he's the great King James, and he's at home, and he's expecting his sons to kind of carry on this legacy, of greatness, if you will. And what happens is, you know, he's expecting them to pick up the ball and become amazing basketball players, just like him. And so the one son, he's picking it up, and he's doing it, and he's practicing every day. He's practicing on his off time. And the other son is kind of sitting out there on the court with him, but he's not remotely interested. And of course, I mean, like any of you who have multiple kids, or even if you have one kid, there's always like that one kid, right? Like that one kid that no matter what, they just have to chart their own course. They just have to march at the beat of their own drum. And they kind of just go with where they're going. And sometimes, you know, we can get with that and sometimes we can't. And here's the thing, LeBron just wasn't having it. He was like, look, man, you know, in order for you to be great, you've got to be willing to put the work in. You got to be willing to practice. You got to be willing to do all of the things that it takes for you to get to that point. And what LeBron found out, and even if you were thinking that maybe because he has more money or maybe because he has more prestige or maybe because of his status that these things don't happen to those type of people. Well, no, because his son doesn't really care about any of that. In fact, his son is not remotely interested in basketball. He's actually interested in esports. He's interested in gaming. I mean, he's actually really good at it. I mean, he's so good at it that he actually went along and created his own video game. He created his own video game, and it's so ironic that the video game that he creates actually becomes the very court and the basis where LeBron James has to face the Goon Squad, where he has to battle in order to win his son back. And so, I mean, the movie kind of sets the stage for each of us to really think about the relationship between parent and child, and how do we begin to build into the next generation, whether you're a parent, a mentor, or a coach. We begin to have an opportunity to really think about how do we build into the next generation. And I want you to know that hey, you know, it's normal. That this is not a so uncommon scenario. I mean, if we're honest, this is probably so common that we're probably embarrassed to acknowledge how common this really is. I mean, some of you are actually those siblings. Some of you were actually that kid. Maybe you were that child that you felt like your parents just didn't get you. They didn't support the thing that you were interested in. And so it's not something that's uncommon. It's something that's so common that I think sometimes we actually gloss over it. Well, today we're actually going to dive right into the deep of it. Because here's the thing. It's something that's been happening for centuries. It's been happening for a long time. I mean, it's been happening so long. It's been happening long, like back even during like Einstein days. Yeah, like Albert Einstein, like even during that day, he was even kind of thinking about these things. Yeah, like, well, I thought he was more into science. Well, he was into science, but see, science back then actually was so wedded to humanity that he was always thinking about how humanity and how does the future look better. In fact, I mean, Albert Einstein actually said this when it came to children and educating children. He says, while they have the best intentions for their children, many parents forget that learning cannot be imposed. That you cannot impose your will or what you want or what you expect your students to learn. You can't impose that. That in fact, like you actually need to maybe take a step back. And so this isn't something that's, again, it's not a new phenomenon. This is something that they've been thinking about for centuries, for years. And I mean, and here's the thing. We have to learn from our past so that we don't repeat these mistakes, because if we continue to repeat them, then guess what? The future is going to be in the hands of those individuals who we failed and who we feel like we've let down. And so today, we're going to look at a story that goes way back. And before I even go way back to the biblical age, there's actually another quick guy that I want to mention. And before I even mention him, like, have you ever noticed, like, the people who don't have kids always seem to have the best advice on how to raise your kids? Yeah, am I the only one? No? Yeah, that seems to be the case, right? And so, but this guy, he actually has advice. He's a physicist. He has advice. And he actually is a parent. But I like what he has to say. It's a guy by the name of Galileo, and he says this: you cannot teach anybody anything. You can only help them discover it within themselves. And I thought, wow, all this time I've been thinking these guys are just amazing scientists and physicists, but they have a perspective of the world and the way in which we can build into the next generation. And this is so important, BBC, because this worthwhile, it's worthwhile to remember that Einstein and Galileo, both monolithic contributions to science, were not the result of grueling academic pursuit. But what they were able to discover in science was the result of intrinsic love for science. It was their intrinsic love. It was something that was within them that they loved that began to come out of them. That we actually were beneficiaries of those scientific breakthroughs. And I want you to hear this because, see, the key word there is love. And like I said, we're going to look back at this story today to kind of help us discover and rediscover for some of us, and maybe even walk out some next steps on how we can begin to love and infuse love into the next generation. See, because I believe that when we can infuse love, we begin to champion the passion and ignite the fire within that generation to really pursue the things that are within. And that love it can be hard to give. And yet, if we are careful and if we are intentional, we can use that love to create and begin to build into the next generation. So let me jump into this story, and I'm taking it way back, because again, this has been happening for a long time. I'm taking it way back to a guy that's probably one of the oldest guys you've ever heard of. It's a guy by the name of Moses, right? I mean, we've kind of all heard about the story of Moses, and I remember as a kid, we used to joke like, you're as old as Moses, right? It's like Moses is like old. So we know that we're going way back when we're talking about Moses, but Moses' story, his beginning story, it's so interesting, so fascinating. And so that's what we're going to look at today. Look at how it starts off. It says, now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she couldn't hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. And then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the banks of the Nile. Now, I want you to think about this for a second, because this is a very interesting passage, right? I mean, she has this child. She's married, right? There's nothing wrong there. She has this child. The child is fine. The child is healthy. The child is handsome. The child is nice. It's like, okay, why would you hide a perfectly good child? Like what's going on there? Like, what's happening with her to the point where she's like, no, it's a handsome young man, and I need to hide it. I need to hide it. I don't want anybody to know that I have this handsome boy that now is this bundle of joy. I need to hide it. And right off the bat, what we begin to see is that she's attempting to really control the destiny of the child early on. And here's the thing, right? I mean, I got an 18-month-old at home. If I'm honest, like, newborns are not, I'm like, how did you even know it was fine? Because newborn, they come out, they got all that stuff on. I mean, it's kind of like Alien versus Predator to me. Like, I mean, I think my daughter's beautiful now, but like when they first come out, it's like, I don't know. And you know, so I mean, it's beautiful and weird at the same time. But maybe that's not your story. Maybe that's just my story. But I want you to know, like, at the end of the day, she felt like she needed to start to hide the child. And she decides that she wants to not only hide him, but she begins to try to control this and destine this life. A life that already has something within it that God has purposed. But she's like, no, I'm going to hide it. I'm going to send it to a place that's better than where we are. She says because she's a Levite woman, which means that she's a part of the Hebrew tribes. And because she's one of those Hebrew tribes, guess what? They were enslaved. They were a slave culture. And so because of that, she's like, you know what? No. My son, I want you to be somebody that's like a king, right? I want you to go and be a part of something that's better than this. She's trying to control the destiny of the child. Child can't even talk. She's like, no, I'm sending this somewhere else. Sends it up the Nile River. And it's interesting because, I mean, that's what most of us would do, right? Most of us are trying to create a better life for our kids, for our students. We're like, we want it to be better than the way that we grew up. We want you to have better opportunities than what we had. And so we got to push you. I want you to do better at basketball than I did because I never made the team, but I know you can make the team. I want you to do better at cheerleading because I maybe was a cheerleader, but I think that you can go further than I did, right? And you, maybe I want you to be a swimmer because you know, I was a swimmer, so I want you to be better. I want you to be better than me, 2.0. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that, but she's trying to control this life. So she wanted her son to become a king. And speaking of king, it's interesting because we're talking about King James, right? King LeBron James, right? We're talking about this king. So she sends Moses up the river. He ends up in Pharaoh's quarters, and he ends up being raised kind of as a king. He's raised in royalty. And ultimately, I mean, it's genuine. I mean, I think it's something that was genuine with her to try to do this and try to manufacture this. And he goes And that's what happens. But see, the story continues. And this is where it picks up at. It says that one day after Moses had grown up, so he spent all of his years in the palace, in the courts of the Pharaoh, getting the best education, being in the best schools, right? Having all of the things that he needs, right? You know, it's kind of like he was raising fishers, right? Maybe. Okay. No, maybe not. So I mean, he's raised in the palace. He's raised in a place that has resources and places that he's got everything he needs. But it says one day Moses had grown up and he went out to where his own people were. So I told you, he was actually originally a part of the Levite tribe, which would have been the slaves. So he goes out, looks out on the balcony, and he begins to see his own people. And when he sees them, they're hard at work. But then he saw the Egyptian, the people that raised him in the palace. They see them beating the Hebrew. One of his own people. In that moment, all of the schooling, all of the rearing, all of being in the palace, all of that didn't mean anything because this moment, it did something inside. He started to discover something that was inside of him, and because he started to discover what was inside of him, guess what? He wanted to seek out what was burning inside of him. And it was at this moment that he began to move in a rhythm that was to make him great. See, because what happens is he started to slide right into what his destiny was to begin with. That his destiny was to be this great leader. The great leader of the people of God. And when he was in that space, something happened in this particular moment. And he slid into his destiny, and he was able to discover his greatness because of what he loved, because of he had a love for his people. And the moment that he saw the Egyptian beating them, he felt it as if it was him being beaten. And because of that, it began to stoke the curiosity, and he became a great leader. And this is what I discovered. This is what we can learn from Moses, and it's this. See, if we decide to follow what we love, if we follow what we love, then greatness will follow you. That you don't have to try to manufacture greatness in your kid. If you help your kid, your student, whoever you're mentoring, who you're coaching, if you take the time to help them find out what they love and to push them and support them of what they love, greatness will follow them. And that's what building into the next generation looks like. It's helping students, it's helping kids discover what they love. And when I think about helping students discover what they love, I think about kids and I think about how many of them, they get their futures robbed from them because nobody around them really sees what they love. And so today, I don't want anybody to leave the stream. I don't want anybody to leave this space and not have some tangible walkouts on what that love looks like, on how to love a student and how to push them and to help them follow what they love. And so I want to help us. I'm going to help us today. Help us how to learn how to build into the next generation. If you're a parent, this is good for you. If you don't have any kids and you're a mentor or coach, this will be good for you as well. No matter where you are on the spectrum, anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. And so I want to walk us out. This is an acronym. It's an acronym for love. And I want to walk this through because, see, love is so much more than just kisses and hugs and making sure they have dinner and nice sneakers and clothes on their backs and hairs and clean. It's so much more than that. And so much more. And so I want to start that today. So the first component of this love that you can take away from this is listen. That the L in love stands for listen. And I don't want you to know, like listening is different from hearing. Right? Because I hear so much from students as a pastor of students around here. Like, I hear so much that I talk, but my parents, they don't hear me. They're not listening. They hear me, but they're not listening to me. And I feel like I'm not being heard. I'm not being listened to. They're talking all the time. And I want you to know, like, all of the things that they're talking, everything that they're communicating to you, it's not all going to be verbal. In fact, 85% of all communication is actually nonverbal communication. And so you have to be not only just listening, but you also have to be aware of the ways in which they've been moving and they've been operating. Look at what they're not saying. Because it'll tell you so much about where they are. And so when we begin to listen, we begin to see, we begin to hear exactly where that student is and where their love and where their creativity and where their interests, where they really lie. So not only do you want to listen, that's one piece. The second thing that you want to do is you need to be observant. You need to observe. And by observation, I mean you need to notice and pay attention. Right? Like you don't just see them and you watch them. No. Not like watch them. You need to notice and pay attention. Pay attention if they're interested in the nature. Are they interested in drawing? Are they interested in art? Right? I know. You want them to play basketball, but no. Maybe they're like Dom in the movie. He's like, Dad, I don't want to play basketball. He's got a whole game that he built from the ground up. And yet, because the community says we got to be playing, you know, AAU sports or weekend sports or travel sports, like, hey, this is what everybody else is doing. My kid needs to be doing it too. Well, maybe your child doesn't even want it. Maybe you need to ask yourself, am I doing what they like to do, or is it because of what I want them to do? See, because when we begin to listen and we begin to observe, we begin to see them for who they are. And let me tell you, it's one thing to not even listen to them. It's an even another mountain to climb when they don't feel like they're being seen. Somebody who lives in your house and they feel like you don't see them for who they are. You don't see them for what they bring to the table and all of the uniqueness that God has placed into them. We got to observe. And see, once we begin to listen and once we begin to observe, here's what should be happening within us as parents, as mentors, as coaches. See, what should be happening in us is that our shell should be cracking, and that leads us to the V, which is we become vulnerable. See, love takes vulnerability. It takes for all of us to begin to get to a place where we're like, you know what? I want to share with you all of the wins, but I need to share with you my losses as well. When was the last time you shared with your kid the embarrassing story? I mean, I can't wait to tell Noah the first fight that I lost, right? Like, I'm excited to tell her about that, mainly because, he kicked my butt, but he ended up being a guy that actually became a friend later on down the line. But see, there's some lessons to be learned about my ego in that story, about how my ego put me in a position where I actually lost a fight because the guy was just... He was LeBron James of the court at the time, and I was trying to be, you know, I don't know who I thought I was, but I was not him. And so, you know, but those stories, that vulnerability, you began, when was the last time you shared a story about your failures, about when you messed up? I mean, it's cool to be the cool dad and the cool mom who has it all right, or looks like they have it all together now, but do you remember what the popcorn smelled like when you were at the drive-thru movie and with the back seat of that car smelled like the leather in there? You forgot about that moment, or that time when you were in the locker room and that happened, or the moment when you were at the party in college and this happened? And you can fill in the blanks. In fact, I know there's a roll of things going through your mind like, I don't want to share that one. I don't think I should share this one. But no, they need to know your authentic story. There's nothing more powerful than a student and a kid hearing your story. And when we present our authentic selves, we begin to allow them to see that the facade is not necessary. Because ultimately, what you begin to teach your kids is that they start to build their own facade up. And that facade becomes the very wall that you cannot penetrate as a parent or as a mentor or as a coach. And so you wonder why. I just can't get to them. I just can't talk to them. They just won't listen to me. Why? Because they've learned how to create this facade and this wall because they know that you've been phony and fake with them and you have not shared with them your authentic self. And yet, you think that your kids are going to be the ones that share everything with you. I love it when I can hear a pin drop in here. That's amazing. But vulnerability. And then last but not least, we got to be empathetic. We got to empathize with them. We have to empathize with them. That once we've been vulnerable, guess what? We have to get in their shoes. We got to get in their jeans. We got to get in their shirt. We got to feel what they're feeling. We have to really literally feel like we are carrying the burdens with them. Whatever their anxiety is, whatever that depression is, whatever their insecurities are, guess what? You should be feeling that insecurity, or at least they should feel like you're feeling it as well. Because if you're not feeling it, then who else? Who else will be in their corner? And as you think about it, as you began to think about and wrestle, how in the world do I empathize with my kid or with my student and they won't listen? I promise you, if you begin to listen and observe and be vulnerable and you begin to empathize with them, oh my word, you will begin to see the walls drop. You will begin to see this beautiful child arise. And listen, I mean, this is amazing, because when you begin to empathize, you begin to start to be in a position where your kid is now coachable. Your student is now reachable. And that teenager that really doesn't want anything to do with you because all of it's about my friends and what I want to hang out with, but you'll be the one who they want to come to and share and be vulnerable with. So that's love. And what I love about love is that we've experienced this. We've experienced this from our Heavenly Father. This is the way that He loves us. He listens to us when we pray and when we're in dire needs. He observes us for who we are and who He created us to be. He's vulnerable with us to the point where He's like, whatever you want, listen, grace and mercy, it abounds. It doesn't matter what you did. Listen, I understand it. And empathy? Literally, God said, I want to send myself in human form to experience what you're experiencing in your skin. I want to know what you're feeling, and I want you to know that I've experienced the very same feelings of doubt and depression and anxiety. Feeling like I've gotten stabbed in the back by a friend by the name of Judas, who walked with me for 3 years during my earthly ministry. I want you to know that I've been in those shoes before, and it was nothing but a model for how we ought to be parents for our kids and how we can begin to build into the next generation. And so, now, as we think about this love and as you begin to implement this love, I do have some tangible next steps, some walkouts, two walkouts that I want to share with you, and then I'll let you go, all right? So the first next step, the first walkout is, you know, first of all, last week we did a volunteer, and man, give yourselves a hand. I mean, we had over 30 people sign up to volunteer around here that continues to fuel life change around here. Here's the thing. I do want to ask, like, if you signed up for volunteer last week, that's great. There's still time for you to go ahead and sign up for First Serve, sign up to be a part of any of our teams. And that's actually one way that you can begin to implement this love. Go ahead and sign up for one of our teams. But I want you to know that we're just not about what happens in the four walls of Crosspoint. That we're always about reaching those who are in need and those who are far from God. And so we've also have partners in the community that you can be a part of what they're doing to actually help reach and build into the next generation. So maybe a next step is become a mentor for YMI. Youth Mentoring Initiative. It happens right here in Hamilton Southeastern. You can go into our app or as well as on the web, and you can go ahead and click the button. It'll take you there so that you can go ahead and become a mentor there. They mentor students all over the city. And so maybe it's not working in our kids or our students, but maybe it's doing this outside of the four walls, getting into the community and being a part. And listen, we've got people around here that have been partnering with them for years now. So this is a consistent partner that's been a part of Crosspoint's family and the way that we kind of touch the community. But listen, you can be a part of that as well, because there's so many kids that are just not feeling the love. And you can be a part of sharing that love. No, that's one next step that you can do this week. And then the second next step is, find a kid or student and love on them. You may have your own, but I promise you, you pass other kids all the time. Find one and begin to love them. Love on them, listen to them, observe them, be vulnerable with them, and empathize with them. See, because when you begin to do that, that was actually the turning point for LeBron James in the film. that when he was playing that game, he had to come to his senses and realize, and he stopped his son midway, and he's like, man, I need to tell you that I love you. And that I'm sorry because I've dropped the ball, because I've been trying to force you to do life the way that I want you to do it. And because I've only been able to see it my way, I haven't been able to appreciate all of the amazing things that you're about. And that was the turning point in the film, when he was able to identify that, listen, I've dropped the ball, but I want to get to know my son. I want to get to know the real you, not the one that I want to see, but the one that you present to me. And so, I don't know where you are on the spectrum, but some of you feel right now, you feel like you've dropped the ball. You feel like you haven't been the type of parent that you should have been. You feel like you haven't been the best mentor, the best coach. And I want you to know that today is a turning point. Today, you have a prescription. You have something that can help you start to move in a different direction, that it's not too late, that today is a new starting point for you. And listen, that journey is bright, and I promise you, you'll begin to see the walls coming down. And guess what? The next generation is going to be better because we love on them. We loved on them. And that's the way that we build into the next generation. And speaking of that turning point, I want you to go ahead and stand. I'm asking that you stand right where you are, because we're getting ready to sing this song. And this song reminds us of how God gives us the opportunity to turn around. And we can still have victory. There's still light at the end of the tunnel. There's still hope. And you get an opportunity today to make the decision and say, you know what? I'm not allowing the walls to stay up, because we care about our future. And we care about our students. We care about our kids. And God has equipped all of us to be able to love on them the way that God loves on us.